and especially our visitors. We're always glad to have you with us, and we want to invite you back whenever you have the opportunity. We are in the midst of an expository study of the book of Ephesians. Now, an expository study is just a verse-by-verse study. And we try to be as thorough as possible without tiring ourselves out. So that's what we'll do this morning as we talk about the dark side, which is discussed in the book of Ephesians a long time before it was ever in a Star Wars movie or anything like that. But there's some fact to it. Now, last week we talked about the new man in Christ who is recreated like God and the new manner of life. Things have got to change when we become Christians. And another way of approaching that is the way we're going to approach it this week. That is, the conflict continually between sin and between righteousness. So a little bit different approach. Now, we want to look again at Ephesians 5, verses 7 through 11, where Paul says, "Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were once darkness, but now are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is well-pleasing unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them." When you read this passage, you get the idea that there's a side that is characterized by light and another side that's characterized by darkness. And what Paul is encouraging us to do is not to give in to the dark side. Kind of reminds us of something that has been said in the movies lately, but there is a fact to this. There is a basis or an idea to it that we sometimes don't get. And when I say we don't get it, I mean we don't practice it. And we need to start doing what God wants us to do in this regard. Now, one of the things that we have to realize is what half the world does not admit to right now, and that there is a realm of darkness. There are certain practices that are wrong wherever you practice them. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 3 through 6, right where we left off, Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 through 6, let me back up. "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as become as saints, nor filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not befitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know of a surety, that no fornicator, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no man deceive you with empty words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. There is white or light, and that's good, and there is black, and that's evil." Now, here's the thing about that. Everybody wants to paint everything gray. And whether something's bad or evil, it's just a matter of opinion. You have your opinion, I have my opinion. And there is no standard by which we live with reference to spiritual things. It's like we were talking about this morning in the Bible class. It's as though there's no king in Israel. And every man does what is right in his own eyes. If he wants to do something, he does it. And in a lot of denominations, the churches don't care. It's kind of a come-as-you-are religion. Just, you don't even have to leave your sins at the door. Just bring them on in with you. And we need to avoid that. You look at verse 3 now of the text here, Ephesians 5 and verse 3, where it says, "But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as become as saints." In this passage, the carnal attitude, or that which indicates a carnal attitude, not just fornication, but all uncleanness and covetousness, those things indicate a rule of the flesh, a giving in to the fleshly passions. "Let it not even be named among you as become as saints." not to be harbored among us. Remember the fellow over in 1 Corinthians chapter 5? And what did Paul say about him? Purge out the old leaven. You have to put him out from among yourselves. Don't have anything to do with that fellow. These things that we have named here, that Paul names, don't fit the Christian's character. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, Paul says, "If then you were raised together with Christ, seek the things that are above where Christ is, seated on the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things that are above, not on the things that are upon the earth." When he talks about setting our mind, he's talking about our priorities, our preoccupations, that which we think about and aspire to. Let them be the heavenly things, the spiritual things, because otherwise the flesh is going to take over. It's going to begin to rule us, and when it does, then we're liable to do just about anything. Now, the command that he gives reaches even to our attitude and speech. Look back at Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4, where he says, "Nor filthiness, nor foolish talking, or jesting." These are things that should not even be named among us. Filthiness, foolish talking, jesting, which are not befitting, but rather the giving of thanks. We have to be careful what we talk about, how we talk, and when we do have to find ourselves talking about things that are sinful, what we say. To speak lightly of such is to minimize their unworthiness. And sometimes we're guilty of that. The Christian speech contrasts with the speech of this world. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, Ephesians 4 and verse 29, Paul says, "Let no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but such as is good for edifying, as the need may be, that it may give grace to them that hear." No corrupt speech is to proceed out of our mouth. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer each one." Now, the idea of having our speech seasoned with salt is not to have salty language. We need to remember that, okay? I heard a fellow one time get a reprimand from one of his brethren for being vulgar in his speech. And he was talking about fornication or using an expression that is common to that. And when he was reprimanded, he said, "Well, at least I don't do those things." Well, that's commendable that he didn't commit fornication. Well, grateful for that. But how likely was he to commit fornication sometime when that's all he ever talked about? And his language was filled with that kind of the kind of speech that lends itself to that. Christians are different. Christians are distinguishable in the world and among worldly people. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13. It says, "Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt hath lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted?" The idea is that salt has a distinct flavor, and you are that salt. You have the distinct flavor. We can tell that you're a Christian because of the way you behave. At least that's the way it should go, but often doesn't. "But if the salt lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? What good is it?" Well, that's what he says. "It is thenceforth good for nothing." Now, if we're the salt of the earth and we have lost that peculiar flavor, the thing that distinguishes us from others, What good are we to the cause of Christ? I might say, what damage might we do to the cause of Christ by being such? Those are valid questions that we need to answer. We need to be able to answer them. And so, he says, "It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under the foot of men." What we say is an indication to our character. Look at Matthew 15. Matthew chapter 15 and verses 10 and 11. Matthew 15, 10 and 11. It says, "And he called to him the multitude and said unto them, Hear and understand. Not that which that entereth into thy mouth defileth the man, but that which proceedeth out of the mouth. This defileth the man. Now, you read also, same chapter, verses 17 and 18. Perceive ye not that whatsoever goeth into the mouth passeth into the belly and is cast out into the draught? But the things which are which proceed out of the mouth come forth out of the heart, and they defile the man. What you say is an indicator of what you're like inside, how you think inside. And they defile the man in the sense that they show him to be either defiled or not. Depending on exactly what it is. Now, when Peter followed Jesus to his trial, he followed him afar off, and he sat among the enemies of Jesus, warming himself by their fire, and they accused him three times of being a disciple of Jesus, and he denied all three times. The third time when he was accused, the man who accused him said, "We know that thou art one of them because thy speech maketh thee known." Now, what kind of speech was he talking about? One of the Gospels says, "Thy speech maketh thee known that thou art a Galilean." Well, he didn't think much of Galileans. Galileans were crude, vulgar people in his mind, apparently, because the way that Peter dispelled any thought that he was a disciple of Christ in Matthew 26 and verse 74, he began to curse and to swear and say, "I know not the man." If a man lies, if a man gossips, if a man curses and swears, if he's harsh in his speech and unkind, no mercy, what do you say about him? Well, you don't say he's a Christian. He's not easily identified as a Christian or a follower of Christ. So we have to watch what we say and how we say it. Now, why are these admonitions important? We go back to Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 5, where he says this, "For this ye know of a surety, that no fornicator, nor unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." No inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. It's important that we don't give into the dark side on this, on these things that he mentions here. Now, these evil practices are sometimes made to sound good. Look at verse 6 of our text, verses 6 and 7. "Let no man deceive you with empty words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them." Let no man deceive you with empty words. You think about the things that are being justified today on the basis of God's mercy and love. God is a God of love and mercy, and we need to be people of love and mercy too. So what are we going to do? Well, we're not going to say anything if somebody comes in with a rainbow button on their lapel. Rainbows used to symbolize no flood to destroy the world. We need to take it back. And then for a while, you know, Jesse Jackson had his Rainbow Coalition, and I don't think that he ever intended to include sexual aberrations in that. But, you know, now if somebody has a big rainbow on their window or something like that, you know that there's something a little off-center, or maybe a whole lot off-center. And we've been convinced that we ought to be inclusive. Everybody has a right to the gospel. Everybody needs to hear the gospel. Everybody can be saved by the gospel, but the gospel places certain demands on people that are exclusive. Number one, you've got to obey the gospel. And number two, you've got to quit sin. But in quitting sin, you have to let God define sin, not society. I told the story of the priest that was on television about 30 years ago. Well, almost 30 years ago. A Roman Catholic priest who was a gay activist. And 30 years ago, that was just unheard of. And the woman that was doing the interview asked him, how could he be a Roman Catholic priest and be a gay activist when the Bible clearly condemns homosexuality? She said that. And you know what he said? He said, the Bible doesn't understand homosexuality. Well, the Bible is a book. The Bible has no cognitive abilities or reasoning powers. What you say about the book, understanding and not understanding, you are saying really about the author, are you not? And what he was saying was, God doesn't understand. Well, he's had a lot more experience with it than that priest did. I mean, he's been dealing with it since Sodom and Gomorrah, and maybe probably earlier than that. So, empty words? Yeah, empty words. Let no man deceive you with empty words, for because of these things, not just homosexuality, but a lot of other things that people justify today, because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. No inheritance in the kingdom and the wrath of God. Be ye not therefore partakers with them. Don't be partakers with them. Sometimes we are fooled by what is immediate, what we can see and touch right now, just like Eve was. But look at 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. What the world uses, what Satan uses to foil us in our efforts to get to heaven is our own appetites and our own desire for immediate satisfaction, our demand for immediate satisfaction. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. Wherefore we faint not, but though our outward man is decaying, yet our inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is for the moment, worketh for us more and more exceedingly an eternal weight of glory. Why, we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. We are all characterized by a similar perspective, in spite of what people tell you. People will tell you, well, people in the churches, they come from all backgrounds and all languages and all. And that's all true. And we bring some of that with us. But one thing that dispels all of that, cancels all of it out, is the reason we became Christians. I didn't become a Christian so I could live eternally in Texas or Needles. This world is not our home. And yet, let's just make the world part of the church. Let's just make the world the church. Let's just make the church the world as it has evolved. We all want to get to heaven, and we want all of us to get to heaven. That's our primary concern, and that is where our perspective is based. Yes, I was born in Texas. You never ask a man where he's from. If he's from Texas, he'll tell you. And if he's not, you don't want to embarrass him. But anyway, the point is, our perspective comes from what we want to do in the future. We want to go to heaven. Not where we came from, or what race we're of, or what language we originally spoke, or our parents spoke, or whatever. We have that in common. And so we look at the things that are eternal. That's what that passage is talking about. We look at the things which are eternal, not at the things which are temporary, not at the things of this world. Those who give into the dark side, again, no inheritance of the kingdom of Christ and God, and the wrath of God is their fate. Well, we go on to the next section, where you have the new man that is described in the last part of chapter 4 versus the old man of darkness that is warned about in the first part of chapter 5. Paul discusses the character that leads to the elimination of these practices and contrasts it with the old man of darkness. Now, in verse 9 of Ephesians 5, Paul says, "For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth." The fruit of the light. I noticed that when David read at the beginning, that his translation says the fruit of the Spirit. And that's a little bit out of context. And I'll have to check that word when I get home in the original language. But the obvious meaning is if you follow the light instead of the darkness, you don't give in to the darkness, your life is filled with goodness and righteousness and truth. Now, in the Scriptures, darkness is representative, oftentimes, of sin and ignorance. In verse 12 of Ephesians 5, our text, he says, "For the things which are done by them in secret, it is a shame even to speak of." So they do it in the dark. What did Jesus tell Nicodemus in John chapter 3? Darkness hates the light. It hates the light. Christians no longer partake of the darkness of sin. Verses 7 through 11, Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 7, the passage we read at the beginning again, "Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for you were once darkness, but now are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is well-pleasing unto the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them." We have been called out of darkness into His light. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. There Peter says, "But ye are an elect race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that ye may show forth the excellencies of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, or that you may show forth the virtues, the good things about God, are to be reflected in us and in our lives. We are no longer in bondage to this darkness that we were once in. We're no longer. We've been set free." Look at Romans chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Romans 6, 1 and 2, where Paul says, "What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. We who died to sin, how shall we any longer live therein?" Then you skip down to verse 12 and 13. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey the lust thereof. Neither present your members unto sin as instruments of unrighteousness, but present yourselves unto God as alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. Now, same chapter, verses 17 and 18. "But thanks be to God that whereas ye were servants," or slaves, bondservants, "of sin, ye became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching whereunto you were delivered, and being made free from sin, ye became bondservants of righteousness." We've been cut loose. We've been made free. So, sin is of no real value. Look at Ephesians 5 and verse 11 once again. Ephesians 5 and verse 11, he says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness." The wages of sin is death, friends. That's where it's going to lead. So why get involved? Why give into it? Well, kind of like asking an alcoholic why he drinks. He knows it's killing him. He knows it's already destroyed his life. But he runs back to it as soon as he can get a little cash. As soon as he can get about $2.35, he goes down to the mini market and gets a bottle of T-Bird and It's gone before he gets home. So, the unfruitful works of darkness, are we going to be involved in that kind of stuff? Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them. Ephesians 5, verse 11. That's part of our text there in Ephesians 5. Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather even reprove them. Well, what unfruitful works of darkness are we talking about? We're talking about doctrinal error. We're talking about perverted and confused worship, worshiping after the precepts of men. We're talking about behavior of individuals that is not what it ought to be. And you'll notice in the yellow there, passiveness means partaking. You have used the expression. I heard a fellow use this expression one time, and then later on when I used it, he said, oh, that's not right. And that is, silence means consent. No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. Well, just because you don't say anything doesn't mean that you agree. No, it doesn't, but you give permission. You don't stand up. If you're not standing up, what are you doing? Lay it down, yeah. What was it? The song, Standing on the Promises. And I knew a preacher one time that he led that song. He said, we're going to sing a little bit different. We're going to sing about sitting on the premises. And that's what people do. They sit on the premises. They don't stand on anything. Just sit around. And when sin raises its ugly head in the church, they say, oh, well, we can live through this. Or they just go somewhere else and don't say a word. Shame on them. In saying nothing against sin, we voice our approval. 2 John 9 through 11. 2 John in verses 9 through 11. No chapters in John, 2 John. He says in verse 9, whosoever goeth onward and abideth not in the teaching of Christ hath not God. He that abideth in the teaching, the same hath both the Father and the Son. If anyone cometh unto you and bringeth not this teaching, receive him not in your house and give him no greeting, for he that giveth him greeting partaketh in his evil works. We don't want to walk in the ways of the wicked, the wisdom of the wicked. We don't want to stand in the ways of sinners. We don't want to sit in the seat of the scoffer, do we? Well, where does that begin? It begins by listening to that advice, walking in the wisdom, and standing in the way, our associations, and saying nothing. We are to reprove sin by teaching the Word. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2, Paul says to Timothy, preach the word, be urgent in season, out of season. You ever thought about that? Be urgent in the King James Version. The old King James says, be instant in season and out of season, which means the need is immediate, regardless. Now, in season, that's when, you know, a problem raises up in the church and you see it. See to it. Well, what if it's out of season? You don't see that problem in the church, but maybe you've seen it somewhere else, or maybe you've heard of it somewhere. See to it. Prepare people for when it will come, because if it's been here before, it will come back. Whatever the problem is. And what we have seen over and over and over in the so-called restoration movement is the same issues rising up. Every generation, every other generation, a little bit different twist to them, a different application, but the same issues every time. Some of us have been around long enough so that we can see him. And some of us have been around long enough, but we can't see him because we've had our eyes closed to him the whole time. Or maybe we've been accepting of them. Preach the word. Be urgent in season, out of season. Reprove. Rebuke. Exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. Well, it's okay to reprove and exhort, but don't you be rebuking. Not from the pulpit. Well, then why does he include that in preaching the word? That's a part of preaching. And sometimes it's needed. Sometimes it is downright necessary. Large congregation in a state where I haven't been for a long time. They knew that the error was there, and they tried to deal with it on an individual, case-by-case situation. But the problem is you can't run down every case. You don't know what all is going on. Sometimes it takes getting up and preaching. They knew the problem was there, and they knew it was in danger of splitting the church 2 years before they said anything publicly about it. And you know what happened? It split the church. They let it happen. There's another place over in Texas where they get to a certain passage and they just made an agreement, gentleman's agreement, not a gentleman's agreement, the devil's agreement. They made a covenant with Egypt. We just won't make any comments when we come to this verse. We'll just read the verse and go on to the next verse. And the controversy split the church. The problem was it was not a clean split. The people who left, they fragmented off. One group left because they were in disagreement and outnumbered. And the rest left because there was no certain teaching coming from the pulpit on the matter, on a matter that was troubling the church. And to this day, a year after the whole thing got started, or blew up, let's put it that way, nobody knows where the preacher stands on the issue. Except one person that I know who went and asked. And a yes or no answer took half an hour. Nearly wore her out. But she asked the question, waited for the answer. Preach the word. Be urgent in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. The darkness is best reproved by the light. Again, by preaching the truth. Going back to Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 13. But all things when they are reproved are made manifest by the light. For everything that is made manifest is light. I was asked to hold a meeting one time with a bunch of people that were way off on several issues, and I didn't know what they were off on. I didn't have any idea, but I somehow got in their kitchen, and you should see me in the kitchen. And I got them on about four or five different things that they were in error on. And you know what they did? They changed. It was amazing. Two or three of them came and asked me, well, we've got this problem that you've been talking about. What should we do? And you know what the answer is. What is the answer? The first answer is, what does the Bible say? And the Bible said, change. What does the Bible say? The character, our character, is to contrast with that of the world, like a light contrasts with the darkness. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 2, it says, "Be not fashioned according to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Now, this has nothing to do with right and wrong. But just to illustrate the point, when I was at my sister's the last time, the preacher got up to preach in a leisure suit. Oh, Chris, you don't know what a leisure suit is? You think so? Well, he stood out. I mean, he could be in a crowd of people and all of them looked similar, and he'd stand out because he's wearing a leisure suit. And I kind of made a joke about it, and he says, "I'll bet you have some in your closet." And I said, "Have you been to my house?" I said, "If I have it in my closet, you can have everything. You can have every leisure suit or piece of leisure suit that all fits you." All too big for me now anyway. But anyway, he stood out. And we should stand out, just like salt stands out from food that doesn't have salt in it. Doesn't make me real happy, but there you go. We are to contrast with the darkness of the world so that the darkness of the world is reproved by us. We are to contrast with the darkness that is in the church sometimes because we don't conform to that. We ask, where does the Bible say that? And the last time I, in serious discussion, asked a fellow that, he said, "Well, you know, you got to work out your own salvation." Whew. Now, we're to be seen as lights in a dark world in Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Paul says, "Do all things without murmurings and questionings, that ye may become blameless and harmless, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation." We're children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom ye are seen as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life. And we've used the illustration of I've got a picture of a lighthouse up there, but we use the illustration of the Statue of Liberty, holding forth that light. Oh, would that light be the gospel of Jesus Christ? But it's not. It's good light, but it's not that good. The true Christian must not hide his light under a bushel, according to Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, because the world is supposed to see our good works and glorify our Father who is in heaven. Our light is to be seen not only in our character, but also in our message as we hold forth the word of life. Years ago, I did a lot of traveling to California when I was preaching over in Glendale because I had a lot of friends over there. My grandmother lived over there, all my relatives, all my mother's relatives. And we'd go over and we invariably find ourselves driving home late at night. And Interstate 10 ended at what they call the Brenda Cutoff, which is the other side of Vicksburg. You only know where that is if you're a truck driver and you're wide awake when you go through it. But anyway, this side of Quartzsite. So we'd turn off and take 60 out through Wyndon and Siloam and Aguila, and Wickenburg, and all those little towns. But between the turnoff and the first town, it was dark. There was nothing out there. So here we are driving along, and it's pitch black, just as black as a night could possibly be. And way up in the distance, there's a light. a light. And it kind of let me know, as everybody else in the car was sound asleep, and I was trying not to be, that there's life out there. That, you know, the world has not been nuked while we were gone. And it was kind of comforting to find, to see that light. And you'd drive and drive and drive and drive. Didn't seem like you'd get any closer to it, but you come up to a little place called Brenda, which is now just a rock building that doesn't even have a roof on it. And they had a light bulb on the porch. You could see it 15 miles away. Some of you have been journeying through life in a very dark world, and you met somebody who is a faithful member of the church. You saw that light from afar, and you went to it. And now it shines off of you too. If you don't see the wonderfulness of that, then you're just as blind as you ought to be. Our light is not our own, but it is a reflected light. Again, Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 14, "Wherefore he saith, Awake thou that sleepest, and arise from the dead, and Christ shall shine upon thee." And not only will that be salvation, but that'll be salvation for others. But you can't give in to the dark side. The Christian is light in the Lord, but it is Christ that shines on the sinner, enlightening him. Jesus is our light, source. "I am the light of the world," Jesus says. And then over in Matthew 5, he says, "Ye are the light of the world." How are we the light of the world if he's the light of the world? He shines on us and we reflect his light. We show forth his virtue, according to 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. And that affords us the cleansing and fellowship that we desire with God. And it also tells the world who we are and what they can be, what they can accomplish, what they can have. But to return to the world is to allow that light to be eclipsed. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15. 1 John 2 and verse 15. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him." Well, we don't want our reflected light, like the light of the moon, to be eclipsed by worldliness. So we make a pledge to get it out of our lives and shine forth the light that's in God. Now, those in the world who are the alien sinners or sleeping saints are admonished to open their eyes to the light. Let the light of Christ shine upon you. We know God's will, but if we don't do it, we are in the dark. And the darkness is never so great as then. James chapter 4 and verse 17. James 4, 17. "To him therefore that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Now, what would Christ have us to do? Matthew chapter 16 and verse 16 says, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that disbelieveth shall be condemned." As we talked about in class this morning, belief there is more than just accepting as truth the things of the gospel. But it is accepting it as truth and placing our trust and faith in it so that our lives might have a proper foundation built on the gospel of Jesus Christ. If you believe, if you trust the Lord, and you haven't been baptized, then now's the time to express that trust and faith by being baptized in the name of Jesus for the remission of sins. If there's anyone here who's been baptized who needs help with some sin, needs encouragement in time of temptation, needs the prayers of the saints, we're ready to do that as well. But you got to let us know. And you can do that by coming to the front while we stand and sing.